Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined from Tallahassee by Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hi, Zach.
And joining me from Pembroke Pines is Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. Howdy, Antonio.
Hello, guys.
Oh, we're less than 2 weeks from Election Day. Early voting has begun, and President Trump will be in Florida for a series of events following tonight's big debate. Former President Obama also will be in Florida this weekend for an early voting event. We'll talk about all the latest in the presidential race, but first... You guys know what that music means. John, you have a number for us?
I sure do, Zach. My number this week is 83.
All right. How about you, Antonio?
I'm going to go with zero.
Zero. All right. Zero is an acceptable number. And I'm in the middle there with 37. That's 83 for John, zero for Antonio, 37 for me. We'll tell you what the numbers mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, there were lines across the state Monday on the first day of in-person early voting. Roughly 366,000 ballots cast tops the vote total from the first day of in-person early voting in 2016, a sign of voter enthusiasm this year. Republicans and Democrats cast almost the same number of ballots Monday, but the GOP started to pull ahead in early voting Tuesday and Wednesday. John, Democrats have amassed a huge lead in mail ballots this year. How important is early in-person voting for the GOP?
Well, early voting is going to be pivotal for Republicans for President Donald Trump in this state. As you indicate, Democrats have put a lot of energy into getting their voters to vote by mail, and they've managed to build up a roughly 500,000 vote lead right now. That number is going to be moving as the week advances, but these vote by mail ballots are going to continue flowing into elections offices right up until Election Day. Yes, those that arrive after Election Day won't be counted, but I say that for people who are just joining the story here in Florida. We've been haggling over this for quite a while, but President Trump has poisoned the idea of vote by mail or absentee voting. So the numbers of Republicans are just not there when it comes to voting by that method, even though in previous elections, they usually lead Democrats at this time in that method. So basically for Republicans, it's looking like it's early voting and Election Day ballot casting, and that's going to be it. They've got to get their people out to just chip away vote by vote at that Democratic lead. While elections aren't really sporting events, the fact that so many registered Democrats have submitted by mail, Republicans are looking like a football team that finds itself, you know, well behind at halftime and having to mount a comeback. It's a nail biter, and that's what it's like for the Trump campaign right now. But the Republicans are talking very confidently. Republicans and frankly many other analysts say that the big Democratic numbers are merely a sign that these voters are shifting the way they cast their ballots. Instead of in person, they're mailing them in. So you're going to see a continuing decline in the levels of Democratic support in early and Election Day voting as the vote by mail takes its place, basically. They say that mail-in is just cannibalizing what would be the Democratic in-person voting. So there's not that much of a difference. At least that's what a Republican optimist would say right now. And as we've talked before on this podcast, Republican voter registration numbers are up this year. The Democratic Party's historic edge has fallen to its smallest margin that we've ever seen in Florida, to less than 135,000 votes out of 14.4 million registered voters. So the Republicans and Democrats, there's not much of a difference when it comes to the number of registered voters. But, you know, going forward here, every day, Republicans are going to be staring at that big Democratic lead and hoping that daily early voting makes the margin shrink, you know, ever so much, and then get helped by a huge Election Day turnout like they had in 2016. We've talked about this before as well, but, you know, Florida registered Democrats went into Election Day with a 240,000 vote lead, presumably in support of Hillary Clinton. But on Election Day in 2016, registered Republicans outvoted Democrats in the state by 350,000 votes. And Clinton lost Florida to President Donald Trump. So there's a question there. Can history repeat itself?
So John, it's not unusual for Democrats to have a lead in the votes cast before Election Day. As you just noted, they did that in 2016 as well. The voting has shifted a little bit. In the past, Democrats dominated in early voting, in-person early voting, and Republicans did better in vote by mail. Now Democrats are doing more vote by mail and Republicans are doing more early voting. But the story is similar. Democrats are amassing a lead in early votes or pre-election day votes. Republicans are hoping to chip away at that and hold them to a smaller lead. But there's little doubt, right, that Republicans are going to win on Election Day. Polls show that Republicans are more likely to vote on Election Day than Democrats. So a lot of this is really just how big the Democrat lead is, right, and whether Republicans can overcome that.
Yeah, I mean, the Democrats are going to have to bank a sizable lead because, by all accounts, it seems that the Republican Election Day voting is going to be very substantial. So the bigger the lead, the better for Democrats right now.
Antonio, anything stand out to you about these numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I think John laid it out really well. I also think we should talk a little bit about the so-called NPA voters. Those are voters who are not signed up with another party. And then those other voters who are members of smaller parties like the Green Party and the Reform Party. NPA voters have also turned out in large numbers so far, just over 800,000. And when I spoke with Michael Binder, a pollster at the University of Florida earlier this week, he told me an interesting finding in their latest poll, namely that people who did not vote in 2016 or who voted for the lesser known party candidates are turning to Biden by a 2-to-1 margin. Now, let's go back to 2016. In addition to Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton, the ballot also listed four other candidates, including Green Party candidate Jill Stein and Libertarian Gary Johnson. Combined, the four lesser-known party candidates got 4.2% of the vote. That doesn't sound like much until you consider that accounts for 300,000 votes. Consider what Binder said, that a number of these voters are breaking for Biden 2-to-1. You know, those votes now could equal, you know, theoretically, Trump's 2016 margin of victory, just over 100,000 votes. So now we are talking about politics here. So nothing is ever that easy. Nothing is ever that predictable and nothing is ever that logical. But the point is that this election, by all accounts, is a very close and race. It's going to be very tight. And in those kind of races, every vote counts. So that's another potential area that when we do our analysis could be meaningful.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. We tend to focus on the Republican and Democratic voters just because that is a kind of a good proxy for the Republican and Democratic candidates. But how the NPA voters break is critical. And if whoever wins the NPA voters is likely to win the race. And there's more than 800,000 of them who have voted early already. Well, as early voting kicks off, Trump is expected to fly to Florida tonight after the second presidential debate and hold rallies in Pensacola and the Villages Friday. There also are rumors that he will vote early in Palm Beach Saturday. Meanwhile, President Obama will be in Miami Saturday to encourage early voting. Both sides are working on their closing arguments, but there is more pressure on Trump right now as polls show him struggling in many swing states. The situation in Florida, though, is a little different. Antonio, polls have shown Trump doing better in Florida. A University of North Florida survey out this week had him down by just 1 to Biden, which was within the margin of error. And Republicans I talked to are optimistic about his chances of carrying the state. Just a little while ago, we were talking about how his campaign was in rough shape. He had gotten COVID-19. He was in the hospital. It limited him from holding campaign events. Are you surprised at how quickly he was able to move past his COVID diagnosis and resume a pretty hectic campaign schedule in Florida and elsewhere?
No, not really. I mean, look, we can't really speak to his physical recovery from the virus, but we can speak to his political return to the campaign trail. He had to get back to rallies and in a big way, as we discussed in previous podcasts. That's because his reelection campaign has been in jeopardy. And according to many polls, it remains a come from behind scenario. The fact is, the president has made 3 trips to Florida since his COVID-19 hospitalization, with the fourth one on the tap for this week. Nothing says Florida is a toss-up more than the fact that the president continues to show up here. This is a state he has to win. You know, he has next to no path to reelection unless he captures Florida's 29 electoral votes. And if he were ahead in Florida or in a comfortable position, he wouldn't be campaigning here every week. And I do mean every week. I mean, he has been here every week. Now, Republicans I speak with, like, just report just what you said, that they believe Trump will carry Florida. And, you know, as John said, you know, they're going to have a sizable outpouring of votes on election day. But winning Florida right now is requiring spending resources and time here that he cannot commit to other key battleground states. You know, that said, you can count Trump out at your own risk. I've said it on this podcast before, and I will say it again. Trump is the most tenacious campaigner I've ever covered. He is very capable of a barnstorming schedule in which he does multiple rallies in multiple states on the same day. And the electoral map is a narrow one, giving him the opportunity to focus his appearances on just a handful of states at most. Florida is Trump's adopted home state. You know, the Republican governor and two U.S. senators are in his corner. It's a state where he has been, generally speaking, more popular than others during his presidency. So Florida is Trump's to lose, but that he's spending here so much time here, precious campaign time here, tells me that he has been losing it up to now.
What do you think about Obama coming here over the weekend? Is he a good closer for Biden to encourage Democrats to get out to vote?
You know, we're seeing a fascinating pattern here right now, Zach. You know, let's look back this week. Trump went to Erie, Pennsylvania. The next day, Obama shows up in Philadelphia. Trump is coming to Florida tomorrow on Saturday. You know, Obama will be in Miami. I mean, it almost sounds like, is there going to be a pattern here where wherever Trump goes, Obama shows up the next day to troll him? You know, obviously, Obama carried this state twice in 2008 and 2012. He is popular here with progressives. Biden needs to make sure that progressives do show up to vote for him. In addition, there is the all-important black vote. If Biden can thank black voters here and elsewhere for him winning the Democratic nomination. Obama, obviously, is very popular with black voters. He's the first black president. So I think this makes perfect sense. But I'm almost wondering if there's going to be a strategy here of having Obama kind of troll Trump the day after wherever the president goes. And, you know, there aren't many people that get under President Trump's skin, but Barack Obama is one of those.
Yeah, he's tweeted about Obama pretty regularly, it seems. Well, Trump and Biden are going all out to reach voters in every key demographic. Both candidates had events in Florida last week targeting seniors, and there also have been events aimed at veterans, Hispanics, and other groups. One group that Antonio just mentioned that hasn't received as much media attention this year is African-American voters. It seems like a lot of the story has been about Trump's strength with Hispanics and his weakness with seniors, but black voters were a big factor in Clinton's 2016 loss. John, you've been working on a story about black voters in Florida. How important is this group for Biden?
Yeah, black voters are hugely important to Biden. And as you point out, they're part of this mosaic of voting constituencies that the Democrat needs to win in the state. About 13% of the Florida electorate is black. And polls show that they are, you know, overwhelmingly for Biden. We're talking in the 85% range. But turnout is the real wild card. An analysis of the 2016 contest shows that nationally, the black share of the vote was down about 1% from 4 years earlier when President Obama won re-election. A study for the Center for American Progress found that there was a decline in black voter turnout from about 62% in 2012 to 57% in 2016 when Trump defeated Hillary Clinton. And, you know, of course, remember, Trump carried Florida on his way to the White House by 112,911 votes. That's a 1.2% edge over Hillary Clinton. So yes, the black vote is very important to Biden, and he's hoping that the support that the community showed for Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012 is more like what he gets this year. But, you know, in a pandemic year, that's tough. These black and brown communities of America have been hurt worse proportionately by the coronavirus than really any other sector. And the economic upheaval has cost jobs, particularly in communities, you know, like many in Florida, whose incomes were already below the state average. And you're also seeing another factor. You know, churches have shut their doors to in-person services. That's been disrupting what is usually a rallying site for Black voters. So you have a struggling economy and health concerns. All that put together really has Biden organizers pushing hard to get people to the polls. But, you know, as this year's virus-shadowed campaign, as it's heading toward the finish line, you're still going to see some of these traditional souls to the polls events. They're still planned at many churches on the final Sunday before Election Day. That's the last day of early voting in most of Florida. Still, these voter drives are also being kind of recast this year. They're mostly online activities with in-person events that are kind of designed to draw smaller crowds that are socially distanced. Another factor for Biden that's important right now in trying to attract Black voters, he had added California U.S. Senator Kamala Harris as the first Black woman to run as a major party's vice presidential candidate. Harris, whose father was Jamaican American, that has also in Florida opened the doors to some of Florida's Caribbean community, which is a sizable share of Black voters in Miami-Dade and Broward counties, especially. We saw Harris in Orlando this week on Monday for the opening of early voting. The vice presidential nominee also is important in attracting another very potent source of get out the vote efforts, and that's the so-called Divine Nine, the historically Black fraternities and sororities whose networks really extend from college age students to leaders in business and government. Harris is a member of a very outspoken member of Alpha Kappa Alpha, which was founded at her alma mater, Howard University, 112 years ago. So what we're seeing, you know, Trump hasn't completely given up on Florida's Black vote, but it seems to be his strategy seems to be more aimed at holding down whatever margin he loses them by to Biden. Earlier this year, we saw Governor Ron DeSantis. He tried to help Trump out. It seemed he pumped up state funds for historically Black colleges and universities, and then he went and he protected this. What was a $123 million allocation, he kept that from being part of $1 billion that he vetoed from the budget because of the pandemic. And he even tried unsuccessfully to appoint the first Jamaican-American to the Florida Supreme Court. But, you know, it all comes down to Trump, and Trump is a tough sell for this community. His approval among Black Americans has steadily been around 10% during his presidency. A Pew Research Center analysis showed that he won only about 6% of Black voters in 2016. So he wasn't really doing great, you know, when he was elected. But, you know, like with so much this election season, it's a turnout race with this cohort. And, you know, any downturn in the Black vote is going to clearly hurt Biden in this state that is very much known for its narrow margins.
Yeah, and a big percentage of the Black vote in Florida, John, is up where you are in North Florida. I remember Democratic consultant Steve Shale telling me that about a quarter of the Black vote is between Pensacola and Jacksonville, both of which have big African-American communities. And where you are in the Tallahassee area, there's a big African-American community. And I know you've been talking to some of these voters. Can you tell me, I mean, are they fired up for Biden? Do you talk to any Black voters who are supporting Trump? What have you been hearing?
Well, it's pretty much, an all Biden show, it seems like. Those that indeed are going to the polls are solidly on the Biden side. The level of that, passion is maybe still a question. Some say basically they're there to vote against Trump. It's not so much of a pro Biden move. But, you know, I guess at that point, you know, that's still something that's going to.
Yeah, I think he'll take it. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Black voters really saved Biden in the primary. You know, he probably would have lost if it wasn't for Black voters in South Carolina. So we'll see how big of a outpouring he has in the general election among that group. It really could be pivotal. We'll move on to our numbers. John, you had 83. Antonio, you had 0. How about let's start with Antonio? What is 0?
Well, guys, you know, let's have some fun. This has been kind of a brutal election so far, and we still got another week and change to go. So I would do something a little bit more tongue-in-cheek, a little bit lighthearted. So I picked 0, as in zero cost, as in free. Let's go back a few weeks, gentlemen, to October 6th. That was a Tuesday, and it was the day after President Trump was released from Walter Reed, where he had been treated for COVID-19. Now, on that Tuesday, October 6th, the president filmed a video from outside the Oval Office. And in the video, Trump talked about the medication Regeneron, which he was given as part of his treatment at Walter Reed. Trump lauded the drug and said he was working to make it so that everyone who comes down with coronavirus and needs more aggressive treatment at a hospital can get Regeneron. Then he said the magic word, free. You get sick, you go to the hospital, and you get Regeneron for free. Yeah, free, as in Bernie Sanders, free medical care, as in Elizabeth Warren, free medical care, and as in the late Ted Kennedy, free medical care. Now, gentlemen, I am Cuban, so when I hear a politician promising free stuff, my socialist alarm just goes ringing. So imagine my shock when I heard President Trump talking like a democratic socialist from Vermont, vowing Regeneron for all. Then last week, I was listening to Joe Biden speaking to seniors in Pembroke Pines, and he made the case that wearing a mask is the most practical and pragmatic way to fend off the coronavirus. Not only is it preventive, it seems to me a lot more cost effective to spend a few dollars on a mask than on tens of thousands of dollars to provide Regeneron and other COVID treatments per patient in a hospital. So here we are near the end of this campaign, and I understand why so many voters are so confused. We have the conservative CEO businessman promising free medications to people at the same time that he models what public health experts say is textbook risky behavior. And we have the liberal career politician of 47 years counseling personal responsibility and cost-effective preventive measures. Adding to the confusion, the Lincoln Project, the group of never Trump Republicans and former GOPers, put out an ad recently with lots of black and white images of Fidel Castro and the early days of the Cuban Revolution juxtaposed against contemporary images of Trump and Russian leader Vladimir Putin. And the ad concluded saying the Trump is, quote unquote, Trump is English, an English word for Castro. Now, if you look at the polls and all the seesawing and the ups and downs and so many undecided voters and even a small party voters potentially changing voting patterns, it all points to a conflicted electorate. And of course, voters are torn when you consider the ballot is apparently full of socialists. Deals meal, but you know what? That's 2020, bro.
It wouldn't be a Florida election if we didn't have a debate about who's the bigger socialist here. John, you had an 83. What's that all about?
Zach, I'm turning the clock back this week with 83, which is 83%. And that was Florida's all-time high voter turnout in a presidential election year. And that was 1992 when Democrat Bill Clinton denied Republican President George H.W. Bush a second term in the White House. For a little bit of context, the second highest level Florida achieved was 79% in 1968 when Richard Nixon was elected president. And the very momentous election of 2016, when Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton in what everybody agrees was a shocking upset, well, that saw a very robust 75% of Florida registered voters cast ballot. But that 75% ties for the fifth highest presidential year turnout in Florida. 2008 and 1984 also had 75% turnout, just like 16 did. You know, with all the talk this year of amazing early vote numbers and vote by mail, I think a lot of analysts are still predicting, though, that Florida will probably wind up in the 75% turnout vicinity again. So it kind of makes you wonder, what was so special about 1992 that got it 83%? Well, a few political things. The country was mired in a recession. There were three big names on the ballot. Remember Ross Perot running as a high-profile third-party candidate. And Florida was still, you know, a little bit maybe more of a Democratic-leaning state. And Bill Clinton was a Southern Democratic governor running for the White House. He had a lot of friends in Florida and had campaigned here vigorously, just as President Bush had then. But another factor, and probably the biggest factor in these percentages, was this election was the last one before motor voter laws were approved, making it very easy for people to register to vote when they they register their car or got a driver's license. The what was called the National Voter Registration Act took effect in 1993. And it greatly expanded the number of registered voters in Florida and most other states. But that big pool of new voters also included a lot of people who apparently really weren't that interested in voting. And in most states, including Florida, you've seen the voter turnout percentage decline in subsequent years. So so this year, that 83% turnout mark, I think it's probably still safe. And it may well be a record that will never be broken.
Well, we all know that President Trump always likes the biggest and the best. So it sounds like you just put down a challenge for him, John. 83 is the number he's got to reach if he really wants the most enthusiastic election in Florida history.
To go bigly.
Yeah, you got to go big. Well, my number is 37, as in Joe Biden is winning 37% of the white vote in Florida, according to the University of North Florida survey that came out this week. John talked about black voters earlier, and as I've mentioned, we've also discussed the Hispanic vote, senior vote, veterans, and other demographic groups on this show. But if Biden can win a greater share of white voters than Hillary Clinton, that could be the difference in this race. Clinton won 32% of Florida's white voters in 2016 on her way to losing the state. Biden is doing 5 points better than that, according to this UNF survey. Importantly, Biden's 37% share of the white vote in Florida is also the share of white voters that Barack Obama won in Florida when he carried the state in 2012. And Trump famously was able to win over a lot of blue-collar white voters in 2016 by focusing on illegal immigration, protectionist trade policies, and by making Hillary Clinton unpalatable to many of them. But Biden appears to be doing better than Clinton in Florida right now with these voters. That could be a major factor in this race. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy, Chris Rosano. Thanks to all of you for listening. Stay safe. We're out of here.